Welcome to Understanding Congress, a podcast about the first branch of government. Congress is a notoriously complex institution, and few Americans think well of it. But Congress is essential to our republic. It's a place where our pluralistic society is supposed to work out its differences and come to agreement about what our laws should be. And that is why we are here, to discuss our national legislature and to think about ways to upgrade it so it can better serve our nation. I'm your host, Kevin Kosar, and I'm a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a think tank in Washington, D.C. The topic of this special episode of the Understanding Congress podcast is a recent book by Michael Johnson and Jerome Clymer. The book is titled Fixing Congress, Restoring Power to the People. Mr. Johnson and Mr. Clymer each have spent more than four decades in Washington, D.C., and have had stints working inside Congress. Today I have with me one of the authors, Michael Johnson, who, I should add, is not to be confused with the current House Speaker, Mike Johnson. Mr. Johnson has a long resume. He has spent about half a century in or around government, with stints in the White House, Congress, and the private sector. Mike also co-authored a book with Mark Strand titled Surviving Inside Congress, which we previously discussed on this podcast. Michael Johnson, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks very much, Kevin. It's great to be with you, and I appreciate the invitation.
Every book has an origin story. Books just don't write themselves. They're a labor of love. What prompted you and Jerome Clymer to write this book? If memory serves, I believe part of the story could involve a taxi driver.
Yeah, that's correct. It is a labor of love, and we've been laboring over this for a number of years. As you know, Jerry Clymer and I co-founded the Congressional Institute more than 30 years ago, and the purpose of the Institute was to improve the way Congress functioned, help members of Congress do their job, but also educate the public so they understood what actually is going on. Over the past 5 or 6 years, Jerry and I just got more and more concerned and disillusioned about where the Congress was going and the dysfunction of the institution itself. And that's where the cab driver comes in. Jerry and I had written a book called Surviving Congress, which was primarily for members of Congress and staff and new ones coming into Congress. And I was explaining that book to a cab driver on my way back to the office one day. And he said, well, why don't you write a book like that for us? Because we don't understand what's going on up there, meaning the Hill. And I thought that was a great idea. You know, you got to listen to cab drivers in Washington because they're just a font of wisdom. And so Jerry and I continued to talk, and we decided to write this book, Fixing Congress. Not only Fixing Congress, but restoring power to the people so that they can effectively access Congress and also influence it to a greater degree. And that's how it came about.
Well, yes, and I should tell listeners out there who've not yet picked up the book, you really did write this book for the cab driver. It is conversational in tone. It is accessible. This is not some dry political scientist treatise. It really is an engaging read that anybody can pick up, and they should. So in your book, you note that a very high percentage of Americans, somewhere around 85%, have a low opinion of Congress. Why do you think that they feel that way?
Well, I think for a very good reason. Most Americans, as we know from conversations on the street corner and professional research survey work, are just fed up with the place and the fact that it doesn't get anything done. Most Americans are also very tired of the fighting and the growling and the gridlock and the personal assaults that have really taken over our political system. It used to be, I don't want to be the ghost of Congress past here, but it used to be that politics, legislating, and government was kept on a professional basis and not a personal basis. And once you go down that road of start starting to assault each other. Eventually, you know, it's going to be entertaining, but after a while, people just get upset with it and want it to stop. And finally, I think Americans kind of long for an environment where the Congress and the governmental institutions are more concerned about their security, their quality of life, and the restoration of American values and American pride and American unity. I hope that is shown more on July 4th. And they just aren't experiencing that anymore. So it's their government, it's their Congress, and they have every right to be perturbed.
Now, let's flip from the outsider perspective of the average American who more than likely has not been inside the U.S. Capitol, or if they've been there, they've been there for a tour, and therefore they have just a cursory sort of experience with Congress. Let's flip from that to your perspective as an insider, someone with many years of close study and interaction with the institution. Congress is in a bad way. You think that's too, right? But is it for different reasons?
Yes, I do. It's not so much for different reasons. I'm concerned about the things that Americans are concerned about. I happen to be one. But what I've experienced over almost 50 years in Washington and in various capacities, from the media to legislating and then working with outside organizations, is that there are fundamentals to our republic that really have to be strong and vital if a republic form of government is to succeed, and if Americans are going to have a voice and place in the whole concept of self-government. There are five things that we found were really most important to that kind of extend beyond legislating. One is civics education, which is just being demolished in this country. There are now 11 states that don't even require civics and history as for graduation. There are only about 40% of the American people that can name the three branches of government, and only 17% can only name one. There is so much more, as you know, Kevin, from working in these fields yourself, that the research is just simply overwhelming in terms of civics education. The second thing is civility. There is a growing longing for civil discourse and better treatment of ourselves and each other. When a newspaper has to run a column explaining to you how you can actually conduct a civil conversation about politics at the Thanksgiving dinner, we have a problem. And that's pervasive throughout society. And I think that has to be restored, and that can be done inside Congress and outside. But we need more of that. And third is outside interests. There are political parties, campaign systems, media, lobbying, all of them are critical to our system of government and our political system, but they are off the rails as much as Congress is. There is way too much money in our campaign system. There is way too much money coming to representatives from outside their districts or their states. And secondly is the media has changed so profoundly over the last several years, going from a source of information to an advocacy platform that not only gives you information so that you can make your own decisions, but the media is now telling you what to think and telling you what decisions you ought to be making, which is a rather dangerous thing, and there's more concern being expressed about that. And the political parties are involved to too much of a degree, not in our legislative process in particular. political parties and those structures, partisanship, controls Congress and the leadership. The next important thing is congressional reform. And that's a subject for about 2 hours because there is so much that needs to be done. The committee on Special Committee on Modernization did some great work on a bipartisan basis over several years, and I feel very good about being in on the infancy of that creation of that committee and the resolution that really prompted it all going back to 2014 or whatever. But you've been very much involved in that, and you know the good that has come of it. That process and that kind of spirit needs to be extended, and I hope it doesn't get buried in the where it is now in a subcommittee of the House Administration Committee. And finally, is just a matter of civic engagement. There are privileges that go along with being a citizen. There are also responsibilities. And in our system, you just can't let the government run by itself. You've got to be involved, starting, you know, from the local library board in your community to the city council, all the way up to Congress. Citizens can have an impact. They just need to know how and when and why, and they need to be given the tools to be more effective. Those are the kind of core values that we based the book on.
Well, yes, and you've had a chance to have a long view of the institution and its relative health. And I would think that one of the things that probably stands out particularly is the state of the budget process, where, you know, we're at a point where our nation's finances are in really uncharted territory here. And budgeting every year is a kind of hold your breath exercise. And what could be more fundamental to governance than the ability to adopt a budget and then to get the revenues and the spending at the correct proportions so that resources can be allocated appropriately and, you know, Americans can prosper.
You're absolutely right. The budget process is a mess. The budget committees need to be restructured. We need greater discipline in the process, even down to the point of changing the country's fiscal year to a calendar year so it conforms with everything else that's going on. But beyond that, when you, I can really appreciate why the average American just kind of turns that off when it's talked about in the media and it on the Hill. If you go to the grocery store and want to buy a loaf of bread for $3, you can understand cost increases and you adjust your spending to that. When you start talking about hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, billions of dollars, and now trillions of dollars, how can you comprehend that and take a serious look or engage yourself in solving the debt and the annual deficits when it's so astronomical, you just can't absorb it? I used to always hear these pundits, you know, say that the national debt is so high you could put $1 bills in a row and go all the way around the globe, and then it was up to the moon, and now it's up to Mars, and you just can't fathom that. So it's difficult to resolve, and unless there is immense more pressure on those in government, particularly in the Congress, obviously, the spending is just going to keep going, and neither of our presidential candidates have really concerned themselves with that in both of their administrations. So, yeah, budget reform is absolutely critical. Structural reform, the committees of Congress need to be streamlined. And more importantly, though, one of the great things that the Modernization Committee did was make recommendations for easy one-click access to government actions for the citizenry so that they can look at those actions and make their own decisions. And of course, you know, you go back to civility, Congress has got to discipline itself and invoke some strictures on behavior. And as you know, boy, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It could go on for a long time on what needs to be done.
Yeah. You and Jerry Clymer advise congressional modernization needs to go on, and needs to go on, not least because there was roughly 50 years between today and the previous period of kind of really frenetic major reforms of the legislative branch. Those were carried out in the early 70s, and we haven't seen anything close to that. And guess what? The world around us has changed a lot. So the chamber has to change. So let's talk a little more about that. You got lots of reforms mentioned in the book. You talk them through, pros and cons. Helpfully, the book divides up reform ideas between those that Congress itself can just do and those that would require some outside help. So looking at the various fixes that Congress itself can initiate, if you had to pick, say, three, what would they be?
Boy, I hate to limit it to three, but I think I would have to go back to the budget process and political behaviors too, and campaign reforms, I think, would be three that would help improve the environment and eliminate some of the distractions and problems, bad influences on congressional behavior. There are other more transformational and longer term fixes that Congress ought to be talking about more regularly. For example, when, I'm not sure of my statistics here, but when Congress was created in 1789, each member of Congress represented, I think, 30,000 constituents. Today, they represent 720,000 constituents. So the communication between citizens and legislators has just really taken a nosedive in terms of its effectiveness. You can't have a meaningful relationship between a representative and a citizen if the conversation takes place on email or the exchange of robo-letters that are one sentence long, you know, and town hall meetings and other types of communication that don't reach the audience you need to reach. So we may want to consider whether or not to give citizens more influence and more access to reduce the number of constituents that a congressman has to serve. Not going to go home every weekend and knock on, you know, 300,000 doors, I mean, and have meaningful conversations. So that's something that, and there are other things that Congress can do to improve their relationship with citizens. And go back to campaign reform. My gosh, that members of Congress have to spend so much time raising money to get reelected. You know, who suffers from that? The legislative process and the citizens. They are in competition with all these other influences for the attention of their members. And their conclusion, probably accurate, is that they are getting the short end of the stick, that they can't compete with all of these major interests and media and outside contributors and that sort of thing. So those are things that the Congress can do, most of them internally, that some would require constitutional amendment, but it's just not going to happen unless there is more incentive for them to do it. And the incentive has to come from the home front, from the people they represent.
Yeah. My colleague Yuval Levin has been an advocate for expanding the House by 150 members. And I joked once in a column that trying to tell the American public we can make your lives better by giving you more politicians is a hard sell. But it's absolutely true, because the average member of the House of Representatives, listeners may not know this, they only have about 18 staff. And I think they can flex up to possibly 22. Now, imagine a private company of 18 or 22 people trying to serve a customer base of 750,000. Now, think further about the fact that of those 18 or 22 people, not all of them are in those sort of voter-facing positions. They have other responsibilities, like the person who's in charge of media and the person who does the member of Congress's schedule. So there are even fewer people available to actually deal with all the stuff that is coming in. And that's not to say anything of the fact that members of Congress get tons of communications from organized interests. So long and the short of it, yeah, there's a serious structural imbalance there. So what the heck? We have time. You want to hit me with two more reforms that you and Jerry would love to see enacted to make Congress better serve the public?
Yeah, well, we would like to see something occur with media literacy. And this is something that members of Congress themselves can't do, but citizens can function more effectively if they are media literate, if they understand where and how to get various points of view so they can make up their own mind, if they understand that going to only one news source, and I use the term news very loosely, they are very often causing themselves a deficiency in terms of how they can influence the process. We talk in the book that citizens have to create an action-forcing mechanism. And in order to do that, they have to understand how they can force their representatives to take an action or take a position that works. And they also need to know who to tap. You brought up the staff people and that CMF study that was done. I think you wrote about that or talked about that. There are critical shortages of good people on the Hill, and good part of that is just simply because of the pay. But citizens have to understand that who they need to talk to in a congressional office to get directly from one point to another. I remember a great story that Chris Matthews used to tell, and I don't know the truth of it, but it's a very telling story. Senator Bill Bradley was at a dinner one evening. He was the principal guest at it. He was sitting up on the dais, and a waiter came by and put a slab of butter on his bread plate. Bradley said, "I'd like two, please." And the waiter said, "I'm sorry, but there's just one to a guest at the dinner." And Bradley said, "Do you have any idea who I am? I was a Rhodes Scholar. I was an All-American basketball player. I was in the Basketball Hall of Fame. I am now a United States Senator. But more importantly, I'm the guest at this dinner, and I'm going to be giving a speech. I'm the guest of honor." And the waiter looked at him and said, "Senator, do you know who I am?" And Bradley said, "No, I don't." I said, "Well, I'm the man in charge of the butter." And so what citizens need to do is understand who's in charge of the butter, not who has the biggest title or is the most visible, but who in a congressional office do they need to tap to get something done.
Well, I have to say, yeah, the media literacy is spot on, because much of what's lurking behind the reforms suggested in the book is creating better incentive structure for people who work in Congress. I think it's very easy for folks on the outside to look at people in Congress and say, well, Congress is forming badly because the people are bad. Some of them you may in fact be bad. Others are just simply following the incentive structures. And if we as citizens are setting bad incentives for them, such as rewarding them for engaging in obnoxious or uncivil behavior or doing other things that really don't fix problems, but simply just make noise about them, then we too are part of the problem. And that's a sobering lesson from the book. All right, we are out of time. So let me thank Michael Johnson, co-author of the new book, Fixing Congress, Restoring Power to the People. Thank you for sparing time to be with us on the program, Mike.
I enjoyed it very much, Kevin. It's good to talk to you. Hope we can do more. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Understanding Congress, a podcast of the American Enterprise Institute. This program was produced by Jae-Hun Lee and hosted by Kevin Kosar. You can subscribe to Understanding Congress via Stitcher, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. We hope you will share this podcast with others and tell us what you think about it by posting your thoughts and questions on Twitter and tagging @AEI. Once again, thank you for listening, and have a great day.